See, I've been waiting. Waiting on that time. Feel me if you've been waiting on yours. That moment, it's close. It's close.
Yeah. Tired of living day to day like everything's alright. Just waiting on that moment. Waiting on my moment.
And that time is now, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Fighter's Block. My name is Joe Gilpin, the host of The Most, joined as always by my co-host, the king of Salvadorian strong style. How you doing this week, Mr. Jesse Rivas?
Doing great. I'm enjoying the holiday seasons. It's freaking cold outside, but man, like, there's just straight up fire coming in. The fight's coming up this week. I am excited.
This is a good fight week. We're finishing off things well. Jesse, are we able to say that next week we're going to have our end of the year awards? It's about that time. We got to give out the blockies here. To everybody that's been impressing. We had some more impressive performances this weekend that we're going to talk about. I don't think there's anywhere we can start besides with the boxing king, the highest paid athlete in all of sports right now. And I'm, of course, talking about one Canelo Alvarez. He comes in, completely dominates Rocky Fielding. We'll talk about that more. But he delights for an East Coast crowd like we've rarely seen. Usually he's a West Coast boy. The East Coast Hispanic crowds never really get a chance to tap into that. They were electric all night. Canelo comes in, stops Fielding in three. Jesse, talk to me. What'd you think?
This is a fantastic fight. Unfortunately, Canelo has reached the level of superstardom where we don't care about regular men's accomplishments. Now, let's say that he was just a regular boxer who was moving up to a weight class he had never fought in. He's reaching his third weight class, third world champion weight class. He's fighting against a top 10 opponent in every single sanctioning body. He's fighting against a guy who has only lost one time, and that's to the division's best fighter. Stepping into the ring with that guy and defeats him in such impressive fashion, if he was a no-name that we had never heard of, we'd all just be freaking out like, this guy's a legend, he's amazing. But because it's Canelo, people are not giving him the props that he deserves. Do you feel like it's a very underwhelming reaction from the crowd by his impressive victory?
Jesse, I think I can prove it. I think we can look back at what Jaime Munguia did this year when he had his debuts, and he had essentially this performance, and we couldn't have sucked his dick any harder. I mean, we were all about Jaime Munguia, the Mexican Unabomber, and Canelo comes in, does the same thing at 168. I think part of it is that Rocky Fielding looked like absolute shit, and I think part of it was people looking for some way to kind of just talk down this fight, especially as his first fight on DAZN. I think people were kind of looking at ways to chip away at it. But for sure, when you put it into perspective, what Canelo did was amazing. I think he's like only the 10th or 11th Mexican fighter to ever win world titles in three different weight classes. It's a fantastic accomplishment. Does he have a home at 168? Or is he going to drop back down, keep it real at 160? Because he does have reach problems here. Let's not pretend.
Given the performance that Elzudo Ramirez did against Jesse Hart just the day prior, I think there's a room for a unification fight there. I think he would win. I would actually favor Canelo over Ramirez.
See, but is that matchup-based, or is that really how good you think Canelo is? Is it the kind of thing where... Do you remember when Michael Bisping was the UFC champion? We were kind of saying, like, there's a lot of 170s that could beat Michael Bisping, but they couldn't beat the rest of 185. Is it just that he matches up well with Zerto, or does he really fit in here at 168 as a real motherfucker?
I think he just matches up well with Zerto. I think, like, there's limited fights for him at 168. I wouldn't favor him against Callum Smith.
Yeah, I was about to bring up. Rocky Fielding looked like absolute shit. What do you think the game plan for Rocky was? Because I think he kind of came in and he was dropped every single round. He was knocked out in the third. He was taking these Kodo knees the whole fucking fight. He looked terrible, and he didn't show the kind of durability that I think a lot of people were hoping for. Against Canelo, who's never been a one-puncher.
To be fair, Rocky Fielding, his best rounds are the championship rounds. If you get him into the 9th, the 10th, the 11th, the 12th, we just never got to see him there is a problem. But he has always performed well in the later rounds.
Factual, but he just never got there.
He has to get there. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's like fat guys being
Calvin Smith. He got knocked out in the first round. It was like, oh yeah, see, you didn't get to see him in his best. In the later rounds.
See, but it just sounds like a fat guy being like, oh yeah, fat guys eat pussy the best. It's like, well, yeah, but you're never going to get a chance to show off at the dance. You have to get there before you can progress further. And so, Canelo, it's looking like he's going to keep rising. Jesse, I heard a rumor about where Canelo might be fighting in 2019 in September. I hear there's a little talk about 2019 September, Mexico City. Have you heard anything about this?
I have heard about this.
That would be intense, right? That would be amazing.
This would be huge. It could be record-breaking. The last time I remember there being a huge fight in Mexico was when Greg Hogan fought against Julio Cesar Chavez.
The
Greg Hogan.
The most attended fight in history, 130,000.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember that Greg Hogan talked about, he questioned his record. He said he fought a bunch of Tijuana
cab drivers. Great promo. Well, love this promo.
And that built up the fight like no other. The world could, everyone in Mexico could not wait to see Chavez punish him. And, I mean, punish him he did. Greg Hogan, very underrated, by the way. He actually held a victory and held a great rivalry with Hector Macho Camacho.
True, but that just ended up turning into, it was like the second coming of the Ali Say My Name fight. And Chavez really put an extra couple of rounds on him where maybe he could have stopped that fight. He held back and kept the punishment going. That was incredible. And I think Canelo, I don't care who he's standing against, that fight could break 130K. If they really, really dug in and found the right venue and got this fight going, I think 2019 could be the year where Canelo pays off his title as the highest paid athlete with the highest attended boxing fight in history. I want to see history be made, and I think he can do it.
The viewership for this broke records in Mexico.
No shit. Because the viewership, Jesse, did not break numbers on DAZN. The DAZN signups reportedly very low on this, and I'm not surprised at all. We talked about it a little bit last week. I think it's streaming fatigue. I think people just don't sign up for another fucking monthly service.
And I also believe that it's the fact that when you think of MMA fans, you think of early adopters. I mean, we were more than ready when the UFC Fight Pass happened. We were ready to accept it. I mean, we're ready to have it at the WWE network of MMA. Unfortunately, it did not end up being that. We still were forced to pay pay-per-views and not even at a discounted price on Fight Pass. Meanwhile, boxers tend to be laggards when it comes to technology. They don't necessarily are the ones that are adopting new technology. It took them a while to be able to go from ABC Sports to HBO. I mean, and we're talking about they had Ali, they had the Rumble in the Jungle. They had to have iconic fights to get them from going from regular TV to cable TV. Now, here we are 45 years later, and we're going from cable TV where it's like, hey, guys, you want to pay $70 for the fight or do you want to pay $10? And they're like, we'll pay $70 as long as we don't have to accept the new technology.
As long as we don't have to accept the new technology, and also we're just going to stream this fight illegally anyway. So, Canelo's going to have to turn his popularity into DAZN subscribers sooner rather than later if DAZN is going to work out. It really is a big bet they're making.
Whose fault is it? Think about it. So he breaks records on different viewing
platforms. It's not his fault. It's not his fault, certainly. It's not Canelo.
And then in the U.S., he doesn't break any records. He actually does negative. He has terrible viewership. He was out there. He was promoting. He was on TV. He was doing his thing. Every time I turned a Spanish channel, he was on. So he did everything in his part. I think DAZN needs to do a better job on their part.
Every time I turn on Mexican TV, it's not Canelo. Every time I turn on TV, it's some a white Hispanic girl with enormous fake titties and blonde hair telling me what the weather is. That's the only thing I ever get when I turn on Hispanic TV, Jesse. Is it just the channel I'm getting?
One thing DAZN needs to, one thing I think they did right, I really felt like they did this right, was building up a Wilder fight. Because if you notice, every time they weren't showing Canelo, for a random reason, Anthony Joshua would be shown there and he'd be begging Wilder for a fight. Did you notice that?
I did notice that. They did that. They came back to that a lot. And I think that is obviously, I think that would be the crown jewel fight for DAZN. Or Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua could also be that. Although that's a little more British, and I know DAZN wants the domestic subscribers. But when you get heavyweight titans clashing, I mean, people are going to want to tune in. We've seen that on Showtime for sure. We were just talking about that.
Now, what did you think of the undercard?
I thought the undercard was okay. It's still such a boxing mindset where and the problem here was it just wasn't top heavy. It was top heavy with a star potential with Canelo. But overall, the card I thought was fine. They're trying to build stars. They're building up, and I appreciate that. What'd you think?
It was a pay-per-view model, but it's not a pay-per-view type platform. So, you know, when you're trying to build up and get people to subscribe and to come in and to get people hype, I get how you structure it. It's structured that way. But when we're already tuning in, I mean, they need to do a little bit better of having a little bit more of exciting undercard. And I mean, one thing that was a good takeaway, the only thing that was a good takeaway from the undercard was Ryan Garcia. What was your take on the Ryan Garcia fight?
I'll talk about Ryan Garcia in a second. Boxing fans, like, and this is not for nothing, and this is obviously not representative of me, Joe Gilpin, the Puerto Rican rattlesnake, and you, Jesse Rivas, the King of Salvadorian Strong Style. Boxing fans must be horrible lovers, because all we care about is the big finish at the very end. You know what I mean? No foreplay, no teasing, no getting you ready, no romance, just hard, hard pounding at the end of the night. That's all we care about. Horrible, horrible lovers. Speaking of hard, hard pounding, young 20, 21-year-old Ryan Garcia, he looked better than he's looked in a long time. I know he changed camps.
20-year-old.
He's only 20? 20-year-old Ryan Garcia, please stop going to people's proms now. Has finally, he does that shit way too much. He like openly flaunts like, yo, meeting up with this girl. She turned 18 yesterday. Technically not a pedophile. What's good? Like, he just fucking like, he's so close to admitting to crimes on social media.
To be fair, if you're 18 and the guy's 20 or 19.
No, that's fine.
Not
that's
really
fine.
That bad.
No, that's fine. That's completely within the bounds.
Now, once he starts hitting 21, 22, 23, now he's becoming creepy.
I think 22 might be it. I kind of give you, like, a 21-year-old dating an 18-year-old, like, yeah, that's weird. It is weird. But at 22, it suddenly takes on this whole new thing. Like, don't you have rent to pay? Like, what are you doing with this girl? And he's going to pay a lot of rent off performances like this because he looked awesome. He still has a couple technical holes in his game, but his overall discipline looked way better, and he's starting to really come into his own. He moves to 17-0. A lot of that's matchmaking, if we're being honest, but he's starting to really call out these upper guns, and so it's time to sink or swim for Ryan Garcia, Jesse, I think.
He's got the tools. I like how he's performing now that he's with El Chepo Reynoso, the trainer of Canelo. I'm liking it. He showed a lot of patience. He's showing himself to... Was he always that fast, or did he get faster? Am I crazy?
I think his timing is better. I think he's picking and finding his spots better, and that's making him look better than he has looked in the past. Remember, fast is not fast. I always remember this when I'm fighting. Slow is smooth, smooth is fast, and I think that's what we saw here. He was doing things the correct way instead of trying to force these big highlight reel moments. He wasn't just great in flashes. He was great across entire rounds, and he was great across an entire fight. And that is the kind of disciplined performance that he has been lacking from time to time. The chin is still way too fucking high, especially as he's trying to move up. I know he wants to move up to 135, where he has guys like Lomo and Tank Davis. That chin is just too fucking high for those guys. They're going to fucking take it out of there. And his inside fighting...
There's no reason to rush the kid. He's only 20 years old.
Kid. He's rushing himself. He's running in there with his dick in his hand, screaming about everything he wants. I don't want to rush him at all. I want to get him 6 more fights before he ever touches one of those guys. But he doesn't want that.
I say give him 4 more years.
4 more years. Build the wall. Ryan Garcia.
I say 4 or 5 more years before you put him in there against a world champion.
I absolutely agree.
You get him in there with Canelo's people. He has a lot of natural tools. He has a lot of charisma. I can't promise that he'll be as pretty in 4 or 5 more years, but I can promise you that he'll be a better boxer. I mean, he's got everything going for him. The only thing is that they can mess it up is by doing the Fernando Vargas and putting him in there too quick.
In five more years, he'll have transitioned from teen to babe to MILF, which is the classic porn star progression. And it happens quicker than you think. No, I think it's teen to babe to, like, curvy to MILF. And MILF doesn't even mean, like, has kids anymore. It just literally means, like, is an old bitch. And by old bitch, I mean 28, because she's in porn. And they age like peeled apples.
I always thought it was weird when I was in high school and girls wouldn't call themselves MILF because they had kids. I'm like, yes, technically you're 16 in the MILF, but is that really what you wanted?
See, but with that, it's like, no, MILF means I also want to fuck you. I don't want to fuck you. You seem crazy to me right now. Like, you should have, like, you are being ridiculous here. Everything that you are and everything that Ryan Garcia is right now is doing great. So I can't wait for his MILF years is what I'm saying.
Now, last week we had the farewell to HBO. We said goodbye to HBO. Bye.
Ooh, no, one more before we get into that farewell. Teofimo Lopez, go.
Fantastic. Definitely watch him. He's a new rise. He's basically everything that we wish Ryan Garcia was. He's not as pretty as Ryan Garcia, but he's pretty with technique. He's a great boxer, and definitely look out for this guy. He will be fighting again in the Kovalev versus Alvarez rematch. So we're looking forward to see Lopez. You know, he's basically the blue chip guaranteed prospect of the year this year. So definitely look out for him to get tougher competition there.
He might have had the knockout of the year too. That was a nasty knockout he put on that guy, right? That little midair pause that he did. Ooh, good stuff.
We've actually talked about Mason Maynard on the show.
We have. We have mentioned him. But unfortunately,
Mason Maynard, we broke it down. He was supposed to be the next big thing. HBO put a lot of money behind him, and they were going to have him showcase against a fighter that we had lost confidence in after he got destroyed by Terrence Crawford, Ray Beltran. And Ray Beltran was fighting at the time to be able to stay in the country and eventually earn a title shot. So this is a crossroads fight where, like, oh, yeah, Mason Maynard is going to be a big star and he's going to destroy Ray Beltran. Opposite happened. Beltran pulled the upset. So just like 2 years ago or a year ago, Mason Maynard was the man. And to see him being destroyed by this prospect, that just lets you know how good Lopez is.
And let's go one level beyond that to just how good Lopez must be. Maynard took a lot of rounds from Beltran, and he was in there and took a lot of damage from Ray Beltran, who we know can hit like a motherfucker for that division. And Beltran didn't put him out like that. Teofimo Lopez did. So I really, really put it on Teofimo Lopez. A-plus performance. That's exactly what you want to see out of a prospect right now. And Jess, you talked about confidence. Let's move over to the MMA side a little bit. You were talking about goodbyes, and I'm talking about confidence because I feel like I'm losing confidence in my betting ability. Every fucking time that one of us puts some money on Kevin Lee, we end up regretting it.
Did you put money this time?
I did not.
I did. I lost $127 betting on Kevin Lee.
Ooh.
This one was heartbreaking because this is the first time I put money on Kevin Lee since the Leo Santos fight. So I feel like I jinxed him.
It's unbelievable, man. I think that is more than I lost last time, but it's not that much more than I lost last time against Kevin Lee versus Santos.
Man, what a crazy fight. This fight was exciting from beginning to end. You knew who was winning by points, but you knew that if anyone could hurt anybody, it was going to be Iaquinta would be hurting Kevin Lee. You kind of got that feel from like the end of the first round. So even when I saw Kevin Lee dominating the rounds, it could always go somewhere else. And at times it did, and this was a fantastic fight. I don't understand how you're that much bigger than a guy, but you cannot nearly hurt him as much as he's hurting you. It was very Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder, just with a little bit more interaction and contact because they're lightweights as opposed to heavyweights. But fantastic fight. I thought it could have gone either way. Technically speaking, I would give it to Kevin Lee, but if I really, really, really see it unbiasedly and I judged a round by who would I rather have been at the end of the round, yeah, Iaquinta definitely won that fight.
I had it 3-2, Iaquinta. I had him the first, the fourth, and the fifth. I think just late he came on so strong. I think the way that he was jabbing and working that body was incredible. He had great pressure boxing. He had great combos down the stretch. And, I mean, yeah, over time, a power advantage played a big role. Kevin Lee, not using his fucking reach at all, played a big role. And Kevin Lee didn't manage this fight well. He managed this fight horribly. He had bad strategy. And this is a rematch from their first fight where Ally Kinta beat him as well. I believe first round? Might have been like a first round stoppage. It seemed a little fluky. Or no, it was a decision. It was a decision. They've now fought for 8 rounds. And so we think the world of Kevin Lee on this podcast. We talk about him as a potential world beater. And then he goes and he drops a decision like this to Ally Kinta, who we have to raise up. I think Ally Kinta is elevated. I don't put Kevin Lee any further down than I had him. I just put Kevin Lee, or Al, higher up. He has won 9 of his last 11. He's looked really good. He's starting to put words like Conor McGregor in his mouth, which I think is obviously smart for anybody, 155 pounds right now. And he has a great night. Fuck yeah, Ally Kinta.
And the Conor McGregor fight, to me, I think is a big one because it's a beat-the-clock challenge. So while Tony Ferguson gets the fight against Khabib for the title, which is the rightful fight to make, you have to rightfully make that. Having Ally Kinta, who could sell a fight, we could do this in New York, where Conor McGregor's big against a New Yorker. And, you know, he's proven, hey, man, I took Khabib to the limit, and I beat Kevin Lee, so this is the rightful guy to get the title shot. I mean, to get the Conor shot, to get the big payday.
The money weight.
Another big fight for him is Justin Gaethje called him out.
Man, that's an exciting fight too, right? Al has a fantastic chin. He's been known for having a really good chin, but goddamn, it would get tested in that fight. It's really fun. That's how you feel about Justin Gaethje. It's almost like Gaethje like exists outside of the rankings in a lot of ways, because it's just who gets to go in and have a fight of the year contender. Overall, obviously, Al wants the big money fight, but I don't think there's anywhere he's going to go wrong. He is firmly entrenched in the top five in this division now, whereas a year ago, it looked like he was going to retire, and it looked like he was on the outs with the UFC. Now, suddenly, you know, they keep wanting to put him in mismatches, and he just keeps rising to the occasion. So, Ally Kinta, congratulations. You're one of these guys who makes MMA so fucking frustrating. Let's talk a little bit about UFC on Fox, Jesse. As you mentioned, we said goodbye to HBO Boxing, and now we say goodbye to the UFC on Fox. It's not that big of a deal, really, because they're moving over to ESPN. They're moving over to HBO. They're just going to fuck each other. That's what the ground fight is going to be. They're moving over to ESPN, and ESPN is going to be the home of the UFC now for the foreseeable future. Anything you want to say about this era?
Wow, man. It feels like it's always existed. It definitely did take MMA to the mainstream. It definitely made a lot of the baby boomers respect MMA a little bit more, because for a time period, it was definitely the young man sport. I think...
yes, but are we better off for that? Are we better off for having the baby boomers on our side?
Lou DiBella, for a while, described it as a young white guy's sport. As in, not as in the fighters, but as in, like, that's the fan base. And, you know, to an extent, it kind of was that. I mean, it kind of, like, you know, you did have a couple of other people watching it, but it was mostly, like, millennials. It wasn't necessarily anybody who was older. And to be honest, at the very beginning, it was mostly a young white guy sport. Putting it on Fox definitely expanded that. You got a little bit more of the minorities watching it. You got more older people watching it. You got more women watching it. During the Ronda Rousey era on Fox, I mean, I'll always remember watching a woman's fight at a restaurant. And I was at the bar, but there was a little girl who was watching Paige VanZant on TV. And I remember her asking her parents to switch seats so she could watch the fight, because it's Paige VanZant. A girl could see herself as a Paige VanZant.
She's like a Barbie. Cyborg.
Yeah. So she switched her seat, and I remember her begging her dad, and her dad was like, honey, let her watch. And I could see in her eyes, and I could almost fast forward to years of being like, I wonder if that little girl went off the train MMA. And that happened because the UFC was on Fox. This is pay-per-view. You couldn't be at a regular sushi spot and just see MMA just on regular TV.
I knew it was going to be some fucking Asian restaurant you were at. I fucking knew, of course, Jesse was just fucking hanging out some fucking pad Thai shop in the middle of fucking nowhere. You're so yourself. I love it. It's like knowing a TV character. Speaking of,
I thought it was a beautiful era. What did you think of the era?
I thought it was a great era. I thought they were able to make a lot more money. I thought they were able to make a lot more stars. I do think it turned it into a lot more corporate of a venture. And I think that at times the UFC didn't manage that well. But I don't think that was the fault of them being on Fox. I think they just got kind of ahead of themselves sometimes. Like when they started putting on all these cards that really the name value doesn't necessarily match up. And the Reebok deal, I don't think you get that without being on Fox. I think there's a lot of problems like that. Speaking of a young white kid who got his ass fucking whipped by a Latino dude named Edson Barboza, Dan Hooker got his fucking ass beat by Edson Barboza. He turned into the American Zombie here for a little while. We've had a couple different American Zombies. This is the newest one, I suppose. Is Dan Hooker Australian, actually?
He's Australian.
The Australian Zombie. Now we got one. Barboza beat that boy's ass with kicks to the body, kicks to the legs, kicks and punches to the head and body. Just really fucked him up all goddamn night long, Jesse. Did you see this?
Yeah, it was another one of those situations where you kind of got the sense that Hooker could end it, but I felt like you could throw the kitchen sink at Hooker and Barboza would not be able to end it. How on earth did that guy survive the beating that he was receiving? I mean, we're talking about Edson Barboza Jr., a guy who stopped fights with leg kicks, head kicks, body kicks, and he gave him all of those.
The hardest kicker in UFC history, I'll say. Yeah. Pound for pound, probably the hardest kicker in UFC history. And he fucking lit into him all night. Should Dan Hooker's corner have stopped this fight? I remember thinking
Hell
after
yeah,
the second, like,
how
you can they let him out? I think it's a little bit, you got to put it on them. We've seen fights stop for a lot less. And by the way, we're not hearing shit about that referee not stopping that fight. A lot of people love getting on referees these days, like my good pal Mario Yamasaki. I sure don't hear it when it's the guys and not the women. Just throwing that out there. Edson Barboza, he was coming off two losses, and he has finally put himself back into the win column. I'm really happy to hear that. He's going to head back up to Hikardo MMA in Jersey and keep fucking whipping ass. Do you want to hear a fucking crazy Almeida story?
Yeah.
It's not Hikardo. It's his brother, Flavio, from this weekend. It was the No-Gi World Championships for Jiu-Jitsu, right? Not Abu Dhabi, but the more like Federation one. Abu Dhabi's more like prison rules. You know what I mean? This is the respectable one. This is the one where if they do the Olympics, it'll be this. Flavio Almeida ended up having some crazy fight with one of the Gracies, with Half Gracie, who's like a crazy guy, kind of. And Half ends up throwing him to the ground, and like he hits his head on the ground, and then stomping out three of his fucking teeth.
What?
Yeah. And while this is happening, five Gracie Baja black belts, who are Flavio Almeida's boys, are there. They don't do anything to stop him. Isn't that crazy? Can you imagine your fucking head coach is getting stomped and you just stand there and do nothing? It's so wild.
You know, it'd be worse if they were just standing there signing applications to the other guy's gym.
Like, yeah, right?
Yeah. We want to try with that guy.
Well, clearly he knows what's up. Yeah, it's Half Gracie, who is very involved with, like, the Diazes and shit. Like, he's very close with Caesar Gracie. So it's kind of this, like, Gracie mentality. A lot of that comes back to this guy, Half Gracie, who does have an arrest warrant out for him. Jesse, did you see the Bellator event this weekend?
Fantastic.
Yo.
Event. I was a big fan of it from top to bottom.
It was incredible. That crowd was amazing. We've seen great crowds, and I think that the Canelo crowd, for example, was something really special. This Hawaiian crowd was unbelievable. These guys were hot from first fight to last fight. Unfortunately, my boy Ed Ruth did lose. He lost by rear naked choke. Congratulations to Nyman Gracie. But the main event, Alamale McFarland picking up the win over Valerie Letourneau. Holy shit, when she locked on that triangle choke and got the tap, that place came unglued. What a night. What an event.
I thought it was a beautiful event. I had never heard of the very beautiful McFarlane. I thought I want to give a shout out to her. Call me, phone number. I could text you, email me, Fighters Block Podcast. But yeah, she was, I'm a big
Fighters
fan.
Block Podcast at gmail.com.
She's a star in the making. you know, going into it, I didn't know why this was the main event the whole time. We were like hyping up Machida coming to Bellator, so I thought that was the main event. And I had seen Valor return on the UFC, so I just assumed she was going to beat some person from Bellator. But they did a great job of telling me the story. They built it up the right way. This is how you build up a good, like, indie fed. So you have, like, the big star, like, let's say it's ECW.
I was literally about to fucking bring up ECW. I swear to God I was.
So you have Terry Funk there, but the whole night you have other stars saying, I'm here to see this main event. So all of a sudden, I know Terry Funk's going to be on the card, but I'm interested in seeing who this RVD guy is. Who's this Sabu guy? And because, you know, they're on the undercard, I'm like, well, they must be special. And then with video packages and everything the Bellator did, they did a very good job of putting McFarlane over.
They did. They did fantastic. Bellator, we've said a bunch of times, they're clicking right now. They're really hot. They need to keep it going. These guys, I thought the whole main card was fantastic. You had former light heavyweight champ Liam McGarry take out Muhammad Lawal, who is a big star. And he looked fantastic. You have Nyman Gracie take out Ed Ruth. Those are two big prospects. Congratulations. You
had great night.
You had Lyoto Machida take a split decision over your former middleweight champion, Rafael Carvalho. Another good fight. It was an all right fight. And then the main event was just something completely special. Fantastic job. Fantastic job for Bellator. And if you haven't seen it,
boy lost. Great fight.
It was a great fight. I'm very sad that my boy lost, but it was a good fight. He'll be back, I promise. Ed Ruth is a very serious motherfucker at 170, I promise you. And he is still a very bad matchup for a lot of people in that tournament. I also want to mention that Michael Chandler, the night before, picked up the lightweight championship from Brent Primus again. It was a 5-round decision. Do you remember when Primus beat Chandler and it was that weird ankle injury?
Yeah.
It was super fucked up. Gotta say, Primus is better than we expected, because he came in and I kind of thought that, you know, there's just going to be kind of history writing itself here and Chandler kind of taking back over. Like when Randy Couture lost to Vitor Belfort off that weird eye poke, the weird eye cut, actually, and then turned it around and in their next rematch, he just beat the shit out of him. I thought it was going to be like that. Brent Primus gave a lot of meaningful resistance in that fight. I was more impressed than I thought I would be. Anything else from this weekend, Jesse?
Nope.
Fantastic. Let's move ahead. There's really not that much MMA to look forward to. Things are kind of ramping up for that Jones Gustafson fight in a couple weeks. We'll get to that when we get to that. But right now I want to talk boxing. And Jesse, I want to talk Lions Only, because this weekend it's hashtag Lions Only. The Charlo brothers are fighting. In the main event, we have Jermell Charlo defending his belt, his WBC championship belt, against Tony Harrison. Jesse, tell me about this fight. I know you're a big Harrison guy.
I'm a huge Harrison fan. I've seen this guy. This guy is brilliant in the ring. He's a phenomenal fighter. He came just shy of winning Fight of the Year last year against Jared Swifford. He's an amazing fighter. The only problem with him, and it's a very obvious problem, and I hope that he's got it fixed, is he's great for 8 rounds. Unfortunately, boxing is 12. So we've seen him in the past. He's a crunk jump fighter. He's very fast. Great combination, great footwork, but after the 8th round, it's like he's underwater. His defense disappears, he's breathing out of his mouth. This actually caused him 2 fights. In the 9th round of his fight against Willie Nelson, a good gatekeeper, a solid gatekeeper, he got knocked out after dominating the whole fight. And with Jared Swifford, he gave him a boxing lesson. And then in the 8th, he started slowing down, and then he was knocked out by the 9th. If he has not fixed this, he's in a lot of trouble with Lions Only. But if he can get this fixed, man, we got an upset on our hands. How do you see this fight?
I actually 100% agree. I'm a big Tony Harrison guy myself. I think he's incredibly skilled. But, man, I just think Charlo is on that other level right now. Jermell Charlo. This is the Charlo brother for a little context for people that knocked out Erickson Lubin in that knockout of the year. I think that was my knockout of the year last year. He only continues to impress. He only continues to add to that skill set down there in Texas. And I think he's just the man right now. And he's the guy that nobody wants to fight at this weight class, if we're being honest.
He, to me, is a scarier Charlo.
Yes, I agree.
You know, even though the other one's more aggressive.
They're both quite scary to me, a white man, for obvious reasons, but this is the scarier one.
But, you know, he's the more chiller one. He's the one who's a little bit more professional. He hangs out with Chris Brown. He practices dancing with Chris Brown and practices boxing with Errol Spence Jr. That's his main sparring partner.
He teaches Chris Brown his jabs and hooks for when he sees his girls.
And by the way, this one does have a domestic violence charge against him pending right now. So
yes, and that's why I meant he was scary. Not because he was black, but because he has been charged with crimes against women. That is why.
He hasn't been charged. He's innocent until proven guilty, but it is awesome.
Well, no, he got charged. Or has he been charged in court, or is it just been, like, kind of rumored?
I think it's pending. I don't know if it's official.
Okay, so that means motherfucker, he got... Whatever. Okay, we're not here to break down his fucking fights in his living room. We're here to break down the fights in the ring. Does Harrison have it against Charlo? Up or down?
Man, you know what? When you have such an obvious flaw, and you have such a big fight, and you've had a training camp. It's not like they've asked them out of nowhere. It's kind of like, hey, man, this has happened to you multiple times. You paid for it. This is the biggest fight of your life on Fox. The world's going to watch it. We know what the problem is, and we've been given sufficient amount of time to fix it. Man, it just depends on his management. It depends on him. It depends on – but I think he has all the tools. He is 1% away. You know, like when you see those, like, people who do those the sprints, and it's like a fraction of a second that makes the difference between the champion and the person who comes in 12th place.
Mm-hmm.
He is a fraction of a percent away from being, like, on the Charlo's level. So, man, safe money. You got to go with consistency. So I'd have to say Jermell Charlo wins this one. But, man, I would love to see that upset. That would be huge. That would shake up the division like crazy.
That would shake up the division. That would be a complete life changer for Tony Harrison. And, I mean, Charlo hasn't really fought any of the top guys. He's still on his way up. He's still calling out the top guys. So maybe his eyes are a little bit off the prize when it comes to just how dangerous Tony Harrison can be. But I still have to rock with Charlo. I'm still hashtag lines only.
And if Tony Harrison wins, we get the rematch of one of the Fight of the Year contenders of last year, Harrison versus Hurd, too.
Goddamn, how fucking fun is Jared Hurd, by the way? Because I was starting to put together, like, my Fight of the Year contenders, and he's on there. I'm going to tell you right now, he's up there.
Yeah.
The other Charlo brother, Jermall, he is co-main eventing, and he is taking on a late replacement, Jesse. He's taking on Matt Korobov after Willie Horton has had to drop out of the fight. They're going for WBC.
Willie Monroe,
not Willie Horton. Sorry, we were talking about Willie Horton. WBC Interim Championship. Jesse, tell me about this fight. Tell me about Matt Korobov. This crazy, he's a Russian motherfucker.
Yeah, Matt Korobov is, he was a blue chip prospect for a while. The guy was an amazing amateur. He was a multi-time world champion. He was a multi-time European champion. The guy was supposed to be the next big thing. He had a little bit of a later start in his professional career, but he looked impressive in all of his outings. And he was set to win the world title. He was set to win the world title. There was a vacant belt, and he was going to fight Andy Lee for it. Of course, a very solid gatekeeper, a guy who always made it to the title shot, always beat everyone, but could never beat the world champion. He was beating Andy Lee. He was putting the hands on Andy Lee, and then Andy Lee knocks him out in the sixth round, an amazing comeback to finally give us the feel-good story of 2014, Andy Lee finally wins the title. Since then, Matt Korobov has beaten some pretty good contenders, but hasn't been at the world level. He did have a victory over Ustategi, who's a current world champion, but this is a little bit before Ustategi was officially Ustategi the way he is now. So this is his first step up in a long time. My only concern is he's now 35 years old. Now, he hasn't taken a lot of damage outside of that fight against Andy Lee, but 35 is still 35, and he's going against a super, 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 the Charlo who scares people the most, the guy who shouts out lions only. And we're talking about Jermall Charlo, who's at a very prime for a boxer, 28 years old, on top of his game, and he is a very big middleweight. How do you see this?
I see him as a fucking enormous middleweight. This is the guy who took out Julian J. Rock Williams. This is the guy who took out Austin Trout. This is the guy who he just put a fucking huge knockout over Hugo Centeno. He is one of the class of the division. He's another knockout artist, just like his brother. A lot of savagery there. They fight with a lot of intensity, which I love. And I'm sorry, Matt Khorabov, if you get knocked out by Andy Lee, Jermall Charlo can put you on your ass any fucking time. Especially because it's 4 years later and you're 4 years older. And I know he's coming off late notice, and I really appreciate that. And I think he has some amateur skills that if he can start setting the pace early in that fight, he can build off of that. But I think it's going to be really, really tough for him to do that. So I do not expect a... I don't think this one goes to the cards. I don't even think this one hits a decision. I think Jermall Charlo is going to be able to get him out of there.
I don't think this is much of a fight where we're looking at, is Khorabov going to win? But what we are going to see is, how is Charlo going to perform when he is in trouble in this fight? He's going to win, but it's going to show his different looks, and it's going to give us a better idea of exactly how good he is.
True, and sometimes these Russian dudes, you can just hit him with a goddamn tank and they keep coming. It's very... The Russians are good at two things, taking a punch and hacking. It's the only two good things that they have as a society across the board. They're 100% with it. Jesse, big heavyweight fight this weekend. Podcast favorite Dillian White is taking on Derek Chisora. These guys are hunting the big fish at the heavyweight weight class, especially Dillian White. Chisora, a little bit more of a gatekeeper type, a little bit more of a journeyman. Dillian White, former kickboxer, really has his eyes set on Anthony Joshua, especially. What do you think of this fight?
Former MMA fighter.
I thought he was a kickboxer as well.
Was he?
I think he might have been all three.
I think you might be right. I think you might be right. I think he did both. This is a rematch of one of the fight of the years of 2016. Derek Chisora, he has officially turned face. He was one of the biggest bad guys in all of British boxing, European boxing. I mean, the guys have phenomenal rivalries with the who's who of the weight class. He actually beat Danny Williams, the man who knocked out Mike Tyson, a retired Mike Tyson. He had a big rivalry with Tyson Fury when they were a little bit younger in their careers, in a fight that was very close at the time. And some people actually thought Chisora was a little shortchanged in that fight. He got in there and fought Robert Hellenius back when Robert Hellenius was coming up. And he lost by split decision in a fight that every single person thought he won. So he was never on the right side of the decisions. He was robbed so much on that fight. It was so obvious that it earned him a title shot against Klitschko. Yes, I repeat that. So many people thought that he won that they still gave him the title shot after he lost. He fought Klitschko, Vitaly. He lost that fight. Fought David Haye. And as we all remember with the David Haye fight, he had a bottle broken over his head. They brawled. He knows how to bring out the savagery. And he ended up losing a very competitive and exciting fight. Still, he was the bad guy. He TKO'd guys like Malik Scott, who he's Deontay Wilder's mentor. And also, Deontay Wilder's always said should have been world champion. He fought Tyson Fury in the rematch, lost that fight, still close competitive. Lost a very competitive and controversial fight to Kubrat Pulev. Being the road warrior, every time he got close to winning these big fights, he never got the right decision in the other person's hometown. And then we fast forward to the Dillian White fight. This is the beginning of his turn to becoming a face. That was a fight of the year rivalry. This rivalry was so intense that they couldn't have press conferences in the same room. Famously, in one of the press conferences, he threw a table at Dillian White, Bruiser Brody style, and they ended up brawling during the face-off, like they do Max Kellerman face-off. They ended up brawling, so they couldn't even use the tape. They couldn't even do a face-to-face. When the fight happened, it lived up to the hype, and he ended up losing a split decision to Dillian White. From there, Dillian White became a big star, but Chisora ended up having more fights, TKOing guys like Carlos Takam and just earning the hearts of the British public. So now it's no longer like heel versus face. This time that they fight, we're seeing Warrior versus Hogan, WrestleMania 5. And that's what we're seeing. How do you see this fight?
I like that. I see this fight as having a lot of sexual tension, is what I see. When I see these two dudes pissed off at each other, I think they really just need to get in there and start making out to get over it. Chisora, like you said, he's kind of in this journeyman on the outside looking in, kind of deserves it, but never quite gets it guy. Dillian White, a little bit more rugged, a little bit more of an asshole about it, I think you could say. He also hits like a motherfucking truck, and he has, I think, a little bit more momentum coming into this fight, although Chisora's coming off a great knockout over Carlos Takam, like you mentioned. When I look at these two guys, obviously they had a very, very close first fight, and I'm very, very tempted to call the upset. So I'm going to call the upset. Derek Chisora will win by decision this weekend over Dillian White, Jesse.
Dillian White coming in to this with a lot of momentum, a lot of great wins. Dillian White's story, of course, he was always in the shadow of Anthony Joshua, but he always called him out because he knocked him out in the amateurs. Anthony Joshua ended up getting revenge in the pros by knocking him out in a very close competitive fight. And then we had him come back. He just repackaged. Ever since he lost to Anthony Joshua, he's always come out to Back in Black by AC/DC, and he's worn black. He's done everything he can to promote himself as, this is the new Dillian White. This is not the old one. This is the new one. Great victories over domestic talent, such as David Allen, beating Derek Chisora, of course, in that classic fight in 2016. Robert Hellenius, actually beating Robert Hellenius, a guy who, if you beat him, you get a draw. So you had to really beat him down to get that unanimous decision. He TKO'd Lucas Brown, the former Australian world champion, and Joseph Parker, the big New Zealand star. So he's had big wins. He's a great talker. He's coming into this fight. But I think that the hearts of the British people in this fight are actually going to be with Chisora. And, I mean, sad to say, I'm going to go Dillian White on this one. And it puts him in big position. We're probably going to see Chisora versus Anthony Joshua if they can't work out Joshua versus Wilder in Wembley in April.
I agree. What's your pick for the fight?
I got Dillian White.
Rock with it. Does he get the stoppage or does he take Chisora to the wire?
You know what? I think he gets the stoppage. I feel like Chisora's taking a lot of damage. He's a great fighter. He's a good fighter. But I think he's taking a lot of damage. He's getting older. I think this is like the end of the road. And I feel like Chisora knows that this is it. This is the end of the road. So I feel like he's going to risk it more. And by risking it more, I think it may end up with him being stopped this fight.
Man, especially if I remember right, I think it's that left hook from Dillian. It's just so fucking lethal. Jesse, also this weekend we have some UK on UK crime. Josh Warrington is taking on Carl Frampton. Winner gets a whole bunch of British tea and crumpets. They also get the IBF championship in this weight class, Jesse. Carl Frampton, very tough, friend of the pod. He only has the one loss, and it is to Leo Santa Cruz, who he also turned around and beat. I know they're still kind of ramping up for potentially a third fight of that trilogy, which is both the first two were amazing, so yes, please. Josh Warrington, undefeated. He's got a ton of momentum coming into this fight. He's coming off of a win over Lee Selby, if I'm remembering right. Jesse, who do you think is going to win this fight and why?
Warrington is the perfect age, the perfect size, the perfect timing, with the perfect experience to have this opportunity. He's coming off a TKO
perfect
victory.
Dick, perfect eyes. You sound very like, you sound like you're into him. You sound like a girl texting the day after, like, oh my god, this guy I met. He's got the perfect record. He's got the perfect reach advantage. That's how I wish girls broke that. You guys down.
He's got a TKO victory over Patrick Hyland. He's got the victory over Kiko Martinez. And now he got the victory over Lee Selby. This is a guy who's got a lot of support in his hometown of Leeds. He's got that like ravaged fan base, exactly like Carl Frampton does over in Belfast. So this fight's happening in the best spot you could possibly put it. It's in Manchester, England. You're going to get all the crazy people from the two cities. He is the Carl Frampton of his side of town. He is the UK Carl Frampton. So it's going to be very interesting how this fight goes. Carl Frampton, of course, is kind of viewed world class in the UK. He's not viewed as a domestic talent. He's viewed as a potential Hall of Famer and a legend, and rightfully so. He had a phenomenal run at bantamweight, at super bantamweight, when he unified against Scott Quigg in a very highly anticipated fight. He also has the two fights with Leo Santa Cruz, which were amazing. He's got victories over Nonito Donaire, who currently is advanced in the World Boxing Super Series. So he's coming riding high on this fight. He's been doing phenomenal.
It says so much that we just took Nonito Donaire. Nonito motherfucking Donaire. And what do we say about him? Oh, he's advanced in the World Boxing Super Series. That's like the credit we give him. Not that he's won world titles in just in 12 different weight classes. No, but he is a semi-finalist in the World Boxing Super Series.
So I think this is going to be a great fight. I think Carl Franklin wins this, but man,
it's tough, right? It's tough, right? I'm not putting money on this. Just to be contrary, I'm going to go with Josh Warrington because I do think, although I do probably bet, if I'm being serious, that Carl Frampton is going to win. I think they should market this fight. This weekend, we will find out who is Oreos and who is Hydrox Cookies. Who's the real one and who is the weird store brand knockoff of who? We will find out.
Can I ask you a question? What channel is this going to be on?
I have no idea.
Because I will tell you this, politically, on a political level, this is really, really interesting to know. What is good? Derek Chisora and Dillian White are Eddie Hearn fighters.
And they're earning Eddie with Hearn of her.
DAZN, right?
Say again.
So we know this math. Eddie Hearn, DAZN. This is an Eddie Hearn fight. 16 cards all over the U.S., X, Y, and Z, all the stuff that we've heard. That fight's going to be on Showtime.
Interesting.
Something very odd politically is happening. I cannot wait to find out some more information through the underground of what this means, of where these big UK fights will end up.
Yeah, because it's got to be something with the BT Sport box office, maybe?
Something.
That they have some kind of right on something?
Some fuckery's afoot, and I'm going to do a little bit more research, and I've been trying to see what I can find, but it's made everyone just go,
That is
what
unusual.
What is happening? Is DAZN having money issues? Is Eddie Hearn having issues with DAZN? Might Showtime be gaining some kind of foothold? Are we going to see Anthony Joshua on Showtime again? And maybe that's how the Joshua Wilder fight's going to happen. But it's very interesting.
That is interesting. Yeah, I don't know. It might just, like I said, it might just be that they have some kind of agreement with BT Sports Box Office out there who airs all these fights. If you find whatever you find out, let me know. We'll report it back on the pod, okay?
All right.
Anything else for this week, Jesse?
That's it for me for this week.
Let the people know how to get a hold of you.
Follow me on social media, Jay Rivas Comedy and Jesse Rivas on Facebook.
Follow me on Twitter at Bad Tweet. Just follow me on Instagram, Joseph M. Gilpin. For all you guys out there, please subscribe to the show. Please rate it. It would be awesome. Tell a friend. Tell somebody. Until then, until next week, I'm Joe Gilpin. That's Jesse Rivas. We are the Fighters Block. We will be back next week here on The Block.
Peace.